This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Jesse Wells. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, this episode is a little different than our usual FUV Live session. So we got with Jesse before this exclusive performance that he did for the radio station at The Bitter End. You got the chance to talk to him, but actually the songs in this episode are from a show that he did at Webster Hall. So it's a very New York City-centric episode.
It is. We crossed all locales for this particular episode. And, you know, and Jesse Wells has really become a phenomenon, mm-hmm. not only on social media, but also with he was recently profiled on CBS Sunday Morning, in which he was asked, "Are you political?" And he laughed. He laughed at Bob Costa, who was doing the interview with him, because Jesse Wells has become known for some of his more outspoken songs that deal with everything from United Healthcare to ICE and more. His other releases, his albums that have come out, and he is incredibly prolific, are more straightforward. They deal with his life in Arkansas. They deal with the musicians that he loves, primarily like Joan Baez, whom is a huge influence on him. I was thrilled to have the conversation with someone who is really very much capturing the zeitgeist of what we're going through in this country right now. He was nominated for 4 Grammys this year. I don't believe he won any of them. He got shut out. I don't think he cares that he got shut out. But I find, you know, he's going to be touring with Dave Matthews this year. He's got a lot to say. I'm excited for people to hear this interview as well, because Jesse Wells is an interesting human being.
We're going to get to the conversation so that people can listen to Jesse Wells and his takes on what's going on in the world. But first, we have some music.
We're going to first start with something that came off of his 2025 album, Middle. This is called Horses on FUV Live Sessions.
All my t-shirts in Vietnam. There are places that we quietly ignore. There are places that we go and bomb. You know, I thought an awful lot about Jesus, even more about a lie or two. They say that the way of the Tao was to do nothing. But what the hell am I supposed to do? You know, the harder you think, the deeper you sink, the tighter you grip, the more that you slip. So I'll sing you this song about loving all the people that you come to hate. It's true if they say I'm gonna die someday. Why am I holding on to all this weight? You know I heard about the baby tower, and thinking every hour was just for a fool. I thought I was gathering notes for my horses. I was There's a book I read I don't remember. There's a place I've been I've never seen. There's a note that I wrote that went up in smoke. There's some songs I don't ever sing. All the stars in the sky are burning, but they're burning unbeknownst to me. I wish I would have paid more attention to the bigger things I didn't see. You know, the harder you think, the tighter you grip, the more that you slip. So I'm singing this song about loving all the people that you come to hate. It's true what they say, I'm gonna die someday. Why am I holding my heart this way? You know I heard about the baby power, the tidy grip, the 30 cents. Oh, I'm singing this song about loving all the people that you come to hate. It's true what they say, I'm gonna die someday. Why am I holding on to all this weight? You know I really thought that they'd be power, and thinking happy always just for a fool. I thought I was gathering notes for my horses. I was thinking about what's in my blues.
Jesse Wells, FUV live session with you. We are at the bitter end. We are backstage by an ice machine, which is making a gentle little buzz. How are you, Jesse? Thank you for doing this marquee show for WFUV. It really means a lot to us.
Oh, think nothing of it. I wouldn't miss it. So thanks for having me.
You are, over the last, since 2024, you have released at least 8 albums and an EP, and you have also sort of changed, I know, my life in following you on Instagram about what it means to have a voice in remarking on our American life. You remind me in some ways of like greats like Gil Scott-Heron or Curtis Mayfield or Pete Seeger or Mark Twain in a lot of ways. And I'm kind of fascinated about your journey to this place, because you have been in music for a really long time, but you sort of had a revelation in 2023 that things were going to be different.
Yeah. I just woke up. So I'd been doing this for a long time, playing rock and roll and that sort of thing.
You're from Arkansas originally, and your dad, who's a mechanic, he had a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a heart attack. So I had sat up in the hospital with him, and then it really didn't look like he was gonna be able to swing it. So I went ahead and drove home that evening, not too far from there, and had kind of resolved that he was going to depart, and thought, well, how am I going to go about life moving forward? And I knew exactly how I would. And luckily, he stayed with us. But I had already made up my mind. So
you had had other bands. You had come off of being Wells. You came off of that whole thing sort of feeling that this wasn't what you had envisioned that you wanted to do. You were reading a bio on Woody Guthrie.
Yeah.
At the time that your dad got sick.
That's true.
And that sort of, that amazing confluence of a kind of a like a hitting a watershed moment for you.
Yeah.
So how did that, like, what did you do while you were there with your dad and figuring out what your life was and what you wanted to say?
I think it was some kind of alchemical moment, some kind of spiritual alchemy went down, and something in that book and something in Guthrie's spirit, with the great pressure of being next to potential death, all mixed together, and broke through whatever barrier that had been an obstacle to me, and I went ahead and moved forward from there.
You know, it's funny, I wanted to start off this interview congratulating you on your Grammy Awards. At the time that we're talking in November, you have been nominated for 4 Grammys. But in addition, and the thing that struck me is that you, at the Americana Fest, you also won the Freedom of Speech Award that was handed to you by John Fogerty.
Sure.
And can't imagine what it must have felt like to somehow in the last 2 years become kind of a beacon of what I think a lot of Americans are searching for in a voice that sort of echoes Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger or a Dylan or a Joan Baez. How have you been processing this in your head about people are looking at you to sort of speak to their inner feelings about what's happening in the United States right now and the world?
Yeah. If you stop to think, you'll fall off the wire.
Mm-hmm.
So the main thing is just been, where's the next song, and looking for it constantly, and not really feeling all that great until I get to it, and feeling really good while I make it. And then as soon as I put it out, I'm ready for the next one. I'm ready for the next one.
Do you write constantly because of the fact that you've been so prolific between the field recordings that are on Instagram and TikTok, as well as your own studio albums like Middle and Pilgrim? I can't imagine when you ever stop writing. Is it always something, an inner dialogue in your head about what you need and want to say?
I ask, what do folks need to hear from me? And ask that be what I write down. So, yes, it's always writing, but I ain't always writing a song or anything. I'm just writing, just putting thoughts together. And there will be certain sentences and a journal entry where I go, well, therein lies the tune, and then can extrapolate the tune from a couple lines or, you know, something like that.
I was struck, you were on Joe Rogan a couple of months back, and you spoke about things. They had one great quote in here, that you feel that your measure of success is how much I can be myself and be happy that way.
Yes.
Given the fact that you are now, like, you've had bumpy roads with the music industry, now you are embraced by the music industry with the Grammy Awards and everything else that's happening for you and selling out your tours and... How are you keeping your head together so you can continue to be happy doing what you're doing?
By only doing what I want to do?
Yeah. That's... What are the lines that you draw?
You don't know the lines as things come. You're making it up as you go. I'm running with an egg and a spoon, and I'm just trying not to drop it. I don't want to have no in my mouth. I like to say yes. I like to say yes and... Yes, and what will we do? What next? What will that amount to? How can I do that differently than somebody I know who's done it before? How can I do this in the way that I know is wholly mine, regardless of what the opportunity is? So that's kind of how I think about it.
Right.
If you draw a hard line, you'll trip over it. Mm. So
I was intrigued, too, that you're influenced by comedians. You mentioned Stephen Wright.
Yeah, I love Stephen Wright.
Yeah. I mean, and funny, like non sequitur is very deadpan.
Yeah.
When you, I'm thinking in terms of like people like George Carlin were here at the bitter end. People like George Carlin were here.
Yeah.
You know, the legacy of you standing on that stage and knowing that, you know, Joan Baez was on that stage, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan. What about the great comedians of the past that have influenced you?
I love Carlin, although I didn't necessarily grow up on Carlin, but I found him once I saw folks were saying that I was like Carlin, and then I'd go back and listen to him and go, oh goodness, I am, you know. I liked Stephen Wright, and I liked Mitch Hedberg, and I liked one-liners, essentially. What became dad jokes over the course of my life, they were at one point just jokes and joke books, but... Anything that can make a kid and an old fuddy-duddy laugh too, those are the jokes that really got me.
Listening to you, you have, for your field recordings, you use this great Stella guitar that has become synonymous with who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're doing, you know, Joy Nice or Philanthropist or any of the other songs that you have done that have sort of touched a chord with all of us. Can you talk a bit about that Stella guitar, where you found it and what your dialogue is with it and why it's important to use that in your field recordings?
It's just, I picked it up on the way back from the hospital back there in 24. So I had seen it on Marketplace, on Facebook Marketplace, and I picked it up from the guy in the Lowe's parking lot. He met me in a town called Springdale, Arkansas, and he got it out, and I said, this was somebody's baby, because it has a big crack in it, but the crack's been repaired, and who would think to repair a kid's guitar? And it had wear on it already, and he said that he had gotten it in Pennsylvania at a Amish auction, and I thought, well, neat, how much? And so I gave him $80 for it, and I took it and I did a tune with it, and then I just decided I would do all my tunes with it. I wanted a guitar that I could take out into the rain. and then I wouldn't have to much worry about. But now I don't like to take it out in the rain. I want to take good care of it because it's been so good to me. But it's essentially a limb, just another limb of mine at this point. I've spent so many hours on it in the past year. So, you know.
Does it come with you on tour, or do you feel protective of it?
I've brought it on some things when it makes sense. Yeah. But when I'm going to, I don't think as a rule, besides the rain, I don't think it's too good to be precious with really anything.
Right.
Just go ahead and use it. That's what it was made to do, you know.
Horses was one of the earliest songs that you did on TikTok.
Yeah.
That is now nominated for a Grammy, so which is a huge deal. But I was wondering what was the first song that you felt that you needed to address, whether it be an injustice or something that was happening in the news cycle, that you began filming yourself and said, I'm going to put this out here?
I feel like I had a few starts, not necessarily non-starters, but just starts, getting up and going and getting my pace set. But once I did War Isn't Murder, I knew as I was writing it that for once I had really written something that was important to me, that I could sing and really mean. And that kind of gave me direction. People responded to it. People engaged with it. And that gave me just about all the energy I needed to keep going and keep making songs.
Well, if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll make you feel big, come with me, put some folks in detention. Just last week was kinda tough, I put a kid in cuffs, I zip-tied a lady to a van. We can sneak around town, hunting working folks down, I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice? Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. See, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. I got picked on at school, I never felt that cool, there's a hole in my soul that just rages. All the ladies turned me down and I felt like a clown, but will you look at me now, I'm putting folks in cages. At ICE, for respect and power, join ICE, I hear they got great hours. There's a sign-on bonus of 50 grand. They're in need of you needing to feel like a man. Join ICE. Look at them go. Purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll make you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. See, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice? Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE.
It's interesting. We're approaching a year of the anniversary of the assassination of Brian Thompson of United Healthcare, which was in December. And United Health was a song that was especially powerful.
Yeah.
Because the thing that is interesting is that you have to walk through some of the darker corners of the internet in order to make a point. What appalled you was the celebration of the death of someone. yet at the same time, you were able to make the point about, for example, what people went through with healthcare.
Right.
The challenge of writing a song of that kind of complexity, do you write just like 1,000 words and then find yourself shaping and pairing and figuring out exactly how you want to say? That's one part of the question. The second part of the question is, who is the character? Do you have different, because for example, Joy Nice seems a particular character. Do you find that you prefer to write in a tone of a different character as opposed to your songs that are more about you and your life?
I think a point of view, coming at it from different points of view, a character, if you like, will give you more brushes to paint with and more opportunities to be funny, to play a character. If you watch comedians, they usually have characters. Paul McCartney has voice characters. And I think that also enables you to make just more songs in general. Because let's just say if you named them, and let's say if I had Fred, Bob, and Joni or something like that, and I'd go, well, what have I not done with Joni? What could I do? How could I expand Bob? What's Fred done lately? And all of a sudden I got 3 different avenues that I can go down whenever I'm making tunes. Let's say one is incredibly sardonic. One is, some would say, overly earnest. And one is agnostic. With those points of view, you can make more music that way. And you can more accurately portray who you are inside, because we do contain multitudes. We got a lot of people in us, even conflicting ones and stuff, and it's good to paint with all of them. So
it's interesting watching you on the stage recently with Joan Baez singing No Kings and singing her own Don't Think Twice.
Yeah.
What did that mean to you? Because you very much, there is that bond that you have with someone like Joan Baez.
Yeah. That one was a bona fide surreal one. Because I had a DVD of them in 63 with her and Bob, and they were seated. She was obviously more established and maybe a year or two older than him. I don't know if she was, but just confidence wise in the videos, you could tell she would adjust his microphone, sort things out for him, you know. To have grown up watching those videos and seeing, and okay, and then one thing in particular, she was I think it was Newport 63, she was barefoot. I don't know if Bob was too, but she was barefoot. And then when she came on in L.A., she had, when we sound checked and everything, she had her shoes on. I didn't think anything of it. But then she came on, and, you know, the whole crowd is there. And I looked down, I saw her foot. And I said, that's Joan Baez's foot. This is insane. This is the same person. This person is mythical to me. This is a unicorn or a dragon or something altogether unworldly. And to have her come up for a song, that's one that will take a little while to set in. I'm gonna go back and see her after this New York gig. I'm going straight to San Francisco, and we're gonna do some tunes together.
Oh, that's fantastic!
Yeah, it was good. We were fast friends.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. Tell me a little bit about growing up in Arkansas. And first of all, is your dad okay?
He's okay.
He's great.
Yeah,
that's good.
I know, that is good.
What do your parents think of all of this? And how much of Arkansas is like very important to you still? Do you live there? Or you're in Nashville. You're still in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Tell me about what you love about it. Tell me about what you love growing up with your parents and your family.
Yeah. I think where we get born, it ain't like a geographical accident or anything like that. Almost like to kind of imagine you've been shot down out of the stars right down to where you belong. And you'll go out. And I think it's very important to go out and to get out and to experience other cities, other places, even other countries, I think that it's an absolute necessity. It will cure your bigotry. And if it doesn't, you're terminal. Something about where you're born draws you back, and something about maybe even it's the air, it's the first air you ever breathed, and it's the first light that you ever saw when you opened up your eyes and stuff. I know I'm getting far out, but I think that is why I love Arkansas so much. I think it's innate in me that I love it there. I think people are the same everywhere all over the world. I bet you there ain't much difference between the folks in Arkansas and the folks in India or in any other place. So you can love the people, you can dislike the people, whatever. It's in your best interest to love them. But I do think whatever I love about Arkansas is just kind of embedded somewhere in the stardust in there. So growing up there with mom and dad, no one kept too close an eye on me, and I just ran around in the woods all day. It seems like for a good 5 or 6 years, I was just barefoot in the woods. I had a dog, and I went fishing all the time, and I played my guitar. You could almost get nostalgic. I try not to get that way. So, but that's what it was like.
When you're writing songs that are closer to your own story,
yeah,
that are not about the news cycle,
right?
Do you find, because of the fact that you're such a thoughtful person and you have so much to say, how do you put the news side of what's your awareness on one, like, set it aside so that you can focus on the other kind of writing that you do? Is it difficult to kind of separate the two? Because they're twins in some way, but very different in others.
Yeah. I think you can feel guilty about your own whims and your own interests and stuff like that when you feel like you ought to be paying attention to what is going on in the, in quotations, real world, keeping a hold of the news cycle or whatever. But when you spend enough time doing and loving the things that you love to do and that you love to think about and read about, then you realize the absurdity of the, in quotations, real world, like the news cycle. And so I visit there like someone would visit a daydream. It is just this fever dream of bullshit. And I go there and I say my piece, and then I go back over to dragons and wizards, man. Like, I just try to keep things 50-50. 50% staying in the news and paying attention to what is happening. And for every article, for every essay, for every podcast or news piece, listen to something that you love to rinse yourself off with, and write about it too. That's how I do it.
There's a poem, and I don't know if it's a song to the Golden Age.
Yeah,
that you
recited.
Is that just a poem at this stage?
It was a song at one point, but it wasn't that good, so I thought I'd just say it instead.
If there's a poem that that means a lot to you, that you wish everybody that you knew and loved could read, what would that poem be?
Oh, far out. I think it's very important. I can't pick one. I'm sorry. I gotta do two.
You can pick a lot of them.
And I think one is a prose poem, and I think everyone ought to crack open Moby Dick. Mm. And you don't gotta read all of it. You hardly have to read any of it, but just read some of it. Because I do think it is beautiful, and I think it's uniquely American. A snapshot of America in a different time. Poetry-wise, crack open Leaves of Grass. And you ain't got to read all of it, and you don't have to read much of it, but just get a taste of it. And you can, I mean, from there you can follow the strings. You can go from Walt Whitman to Ginsberg, and then into musicians, you know. You can get into beat and stuff like that, but I do something about that mid-19th century where we didn't necessarily have a literary tradition. but suddenly one starts to take shape, and we begin to set ourselves apart from England, the mother country, if you will, and we begin to carve out for ourselves a new American writing. That's what fascinates me. So that's what I'd say, Leaves of Grass and Moby Dick, if you can stomach it. So
before I let you go out to perform for our FUV a marquee show, I did want to ask two more questions.
Yeah.
One was, I was so impressed that you're donating your Bandcamp downloads to two Arkansas organizations, and I wanted to just touch on those briefly.
Yeah.
What those are, and that's until the end of 2025 that those donations happen?
I believe so. It might just be that we need to do that. That we need to do that indefinitely.
And they are, what is the two organizations are,
I think, is
No Kids,
No Kid Left Hungry,
right.
No Child Left Hungry, No Kids Left Hungry, I think is what they call it. And I think that might be a global, or at least a nationwide organization.
Right.
And then there is the Arkansas Food Bank, I believe, is the other one. So, I think that's just something that you can't argue about. There's absolutely, I almost get a little fired up about it. There's absolutely no reason that anybody in this country should go without food. We can argue healthcare, we can argue human rights, but food? Are you kidding me? Yeah, that's just a no-brainer to me.
If you spoke of Wizards and Dragons earlier, if you could indeed conjure 2026 as Jesse Wells would like it to unfold, what would be foremost in your mind about what you'd like to change? Or what you'd like to happen ahead, either for yourself or for anyone else?
I'd like to see a bona fide peace movement on the broad scale. I think we've seen pieces of it come together in this country, but I've seen it. I think you can witness through the 60s and 70s it become co-opted and thwarted by certain forces. I think we could find ourselves in a position, this country in particular, where we put our foot down and as citizens and say, absolutely not, no more blowing up boats with a missile that costs $200,000. Stop the war machine. Hold the Pentagon accountable for a $1 trillion budget. I'd like to see a mainstream movement for peace. That's what I would like to see.
Jesse Wells, thank you so much. It's such an honor to talk to you. I've so admired you, and I thank you. I thank you for your voice.
Oh, thanks.
Well, it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe, if you don't know by now. It ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe, it'll never do somehow. When the old rooster crows at the break of the dawn, why don't you look at your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on. Don't think twice, it's alright. It ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. Light I never know. It ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. I'm on the dark side of the road. Still, I wish there was something you could do or say to try and make me change my mind and say, you know, we never did too much talking anyway. Don't think twice, it's alright. It ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, like you never done before. It ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, I can't hear anymore. I'm thinking and wondering, walking down the road, you know I once loved a woman, a child I'm told, you know I gave her my heart, but she wanted my soul. Don't think twice, it's alright. So long, honey, babe, where I'm bound, I can't tell. But goodbye's too good a word, babe, so I just say fairly well. And I ain't a saying he treated me unkind, he could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kinda wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's alright. Yeah, don't think twice, it's alright. Whoa, don't think twice, it's alright.
And that was Jesse Wells performing and in conversation at The Bitter End in New York City. A big thanks to Jesse for this exclusive performance and for sitting down with me before the show. Thanks to Webster Hall for the music you heard in this episode. Our FUV Live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Ina Volovich. Megan Suma is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and maybe find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. Please rate and review the show if you like what you hear so that other music lovers can find it. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.